Welcome to The Debate. Today, we're diving into a really challenging story. The story of Jonathan Weaver and his canine Mercy. Weaver's path, you know, from being this dedicated police dog trainer to someone acting outside the legal system, it really forces us to question the very boundaries of what constitutes righteous action. So our central question today is this. Does the failure of established legal systems to protect the vulnerable justify an individual taking vigilante action? I'll be arguing for the necessary, perhaps extra legal, nature of Weaver's actions, given what I see as a clear systemic injustice.
And I'll be looking at the profound importance, the enduring need for the rule of law, even when we're faced with something truly morally outrageous. I want to examine the inherent dangers when any individual bypasses those established legal structures, no matter how compelling their immediate reasons might seem.
Jonathan Weaver's story, I think, presents a really compelling case for why extraordinary measures are sometimes needed. It highlights a critical failure within the system itself. For 12 years, he wasn't just working, he dedicated himself to training police search and rescue dogs. That career gave him a deep understanding of how law enforcement works and maybe, you know, where its limits are. His connection with Mercy, the retired canine he adopted, it was profound. She wasn't just a pet. She kept him sober. She slept right there at his feet. But then that stability was just brutally shattered. Teens broke into his home specifically to steal Mercy. And in that act, she was stabbed. She died. Now, this wasn't only a personal tragedy, deeply felt as it was. It was also a stark demonstration of the law's failure to protect the innocent, particularly those who can't speak for themselves, against a really pervasive, ongoing evil. Weaver's actions afterwards, gathering a crowbar, some rope, even a camcorder for a warning, these weren't just random acts of grief-fueled vengeance. No. He specifically targeted the man running a dog fighting club under a Springfield bowling alley. This guy trafficked dogs, and he even dared children into his horrible activities. Weaver's response was a direct, yes, extra legal, but direct intervention against this deep-seated evil. The system had clearly failed to stop, and the result? Every single cage in that basement was found standing open. That represents, I believe, a profound act of liberation, where formal justice had simply not prevailed.
Okay, while the tragedy of Mercy's death and the absolutely abhorrent nature of that dogfighting ring in Springfield, I mean, that's undeniably horrific. But Jonathan Weaver's decision to take justice entirely into his own hands, completely outside the established legal framework, that poses a critical threat to the fundamental order of our society. His trip to his brother's garage, gathering tools like a crowbar and rope, irrespective of the immense grief he was obviously feeling, that action represents a profound departure from due process. And due process is really the cornerstone of any just legal system. The rule of law, with all its, yes, sometimes intricate systems of investigation, the careful gathering of evidence, the absolute necessity of impartial judgment, it exists precisely to prevent individuals from unilaterally deciding who's guilty and what the punishment should be, allowing private citizens to bypass these structures, however compelling their emotional drive might be, or however righteous their cause appears on the surface, it sets an incredibly dangerous precedent. It risks a slide into a kind of arbitrary justice where personal vengeance, not established objective legal principles, dictates the outcomes. And ultimately, that erodes the very foundations of communal trust and stability that law provides.
Weaver wasn't simply reacting to his personal grief, though that was surely immense. He was actively responding to a persistent systemic evil, an evil that the law, with all its supposed mechanisms, had quite evidently failed to contain. The man running that dogfighting club wasn't just a minor criminal. He was trafficking dogs. He was exploiting children. He created this whole nexus of profound cruelty that just continued unchecked for who knows how long. This wasn't some isolated incident. It was an ongoing operation preying on the most vulnerable among us, animals and kids. So when the authorities finally arrive and they find his hands broken, yes, but every single cage in that basement standing open, well, that speaks volumes. It points to a profound impact, a real liberation that the official channels had simply failed to achieve. This act of personal justice, extreme as its methods were, was, in my view, absolutely necessary. It was necessary to stop a larger, ongoing violation of the voiceless. It was an intervention born directly from the system's profound inability to act decisively against such deep-seated horrors.
I understand why you'd advocate for that perspective, I really do, especially given the powerful emotional weight of the story. But let me offer a slightly different framing. While the operation under that Springfield bowling alley was undoubtedly vile, the rule of law, even when it seems imperfect, does provide mechanisms for addressing crimes like these. These systems of investigation and prosecution exist, even if sometimes they feel agonizingly slow or maybe insufficient to those directly affected. Weaver's actions, including using a camcorder as some kind of warning, they bypass these established procedures entirely. He effectively declared himself judge, jury, and enforcer all in one, and that fundamentally undermines the very system that's designed to protect all citizens, not just specific victims like Weaver or Mercy, from arbitrary power and violence.
Personal vengeance, no matter how emotionally understandable it is, given the tragic loss of Mercy is sleeping at his feet, it just risks escalating cycles of retribution. It doesn't uphold justice through legitimate collective means.
That's a compelling point about the potential for systemic failure versus systemic slowness. But if you really grappled with the downstream effects of condoning this kind of individual action, when Weaver's hands are broken but those cages are open, that image signifies a resolution achieved through violence, dictated entirely by one man's judgment, not by an impartial legal process. This whole approach relies completely on an individual's subjective interpretation of what justice means and what necessity demands. And history shows us, time and again, that this can easily lead to abuse, to cases of mistaken identity, or simply to actions that are disproportionate or misjudged. The very idea that intense personal grief, even for a beloved canine like Mercy, can somehow grant a license to operate outside the law, it fundamentally erodes the societal compact. You know, that implicit agreement where we all give up certain rights, including the right to personal enforcement, in exchange for the collective security and impartial judgment of a legal system. Who then gets to decide when the system has failed enough to justify someone going rogue? And where do you draw the line? It's a slippery slope, a dangerous path to go down.
I'm just not entirely convinced by that line of reasoning, mainly because I think it overlooks the extreme and frankly unique context here. Weaver wasn't acting on some sudden whim or just general anger. He was a former police dog trainer. He was intimately familiar with law enforcement, its strengths, yes, but also crucially its limitations. He chose this extraordinary path after that brutal break-in and Mercy's horrific death demonstrated the absolute inadequacy of existing protections against this very specific, very entrenched kind of evil. Think about the camcorder, for instance. I don't see that as about petty personal vengeance. I see it as a tool intended to expose and stop a widespread horror that victimized innocent animals and, by its very nature, exploited children who were dead into that scene.
His broken hands, yeah, they signify violence, but contrasted with every single cage in that basement standing open, well, that's a stark testament to a profound commitment. A commitment to liberate those who literally cannot speak for themselves. An act of justice the system had simply failed to deliver. This wasn't some general call for anarchy. It was a precise, arguably desperate, response to a palpable, ongoing evil that had already claimed Mercy and undoubtedly countless others before her.
But that very distinction you make, calling it a specific and desperate response, that's precisely where the danger lies, isn't it? Because every individual who feels deeply wronged or who perceives a systemic failure in their particular circumstances could then claim the very same justification. The subjective experience of an extreme and unique context suddenly becomes the sole arbiter of what constitutes lawful or justifiable action. You mention Weaver's familiarity with law enforcement almost as if it legitimizes his extralegal actions. But I would actually argue it makes them even more problematic. He understood the protocols, he knew the avenues potentially available, yet he made a conscious choice to bypass them entirely. That act undermines the very framework he once served within. And while the outcome, the open cages, is emotionally resonant, We absolutely must critically analyze the process that led to it. What kind of message does it send when individuals, however well-intentioned they might seem, are seen to achieve justice through force, precisely where legal channels are perceived, rightly or wrongly, to have failed?
What it says, I think, quite clearly, is that there are very real limits to the reach and the effectiveness of those legal channels, particularly when they're confronting deeply entrenched, organized evil that operates in the shadows, like that Springfield dogfighting club. We're not discussing a simple street crime here. This was, by all accounts, a sophisticated operation involving animal trafficking and the exploitation of children, things often incredibly difficult for traditional law enforcement, with its rules of evidence and procedures, to effectively infiltrate and dismantle quickly. Weaver's familiarity with law enforcement didn't make him some kind of rogue vigilante. It made him someone uniquely aware of the systemic gaps, the resource limitations, maybe even the procedural hurdles that allow such horrors to persist under the radar. His actions, seen in this specific, dire context, weren't about tearing down the entire legal system.
They were about plugging a critical, bleeding hole where the system was demonstrably failing to protect the most vulnerable. It really forces us to ask, when the positive written law falls silent or proves ineffective in the face of profound moral wrong, doesn't a higher, perhaps natural law sometimes compel intervention?
This idea of a natural law compelling individual action, while it's philosophically appealing, it becomes incredibly difficult to apply consistently within a functioning, complex society. It essentially invites each person to become their own judge of what constitutes a profound moral wrong, and, critically, what actions are then justified in response. The inherent danger there is that it opens the floodgates to arbitrary justice. You have different individuals operating under different moral codes, potentially taking vastly different, conflicting, and likely violent actions. The whole point of the rule of law is precisely to provide a universal and impartial standard to minimize the very chaos that arises when all these individual interpretations of justice clash.
Now, while the system may seem slow, and yes, it can even fail outright at times, the collective decision to refine and strengthen those systems, maybe through legislative reform, maybe through better enforcement, better resources, that is the only sustainable path towards a more just society overall. It's better than endorsing individual acts that, however heroic they might seem in one instance, ultimately fracture the very societal compact that binds us together.
But that collective decision to refine and strengthen, that can take years, sometimes decades. And during that time, unspeakable suffering continues unabated. Are we truly expected to just stand idly by? To permit the ongoing torture of animals, the exploitation of children, simply because the wheels of systemic change grind too slowly? Or because our existing legal structures perhaps lack the agility to address these newer, more entrenched forms of evil effectively? Weaver's act, while definitely extra-legal, was a direct, it was immediate, and arguably it was an effective intervention to stop undeniable, ongoing harm right in its tracks. It wasn't about him trying to replace the entire system. It was about fulfilling what he likely saw as a fundamental moral imperative, precisely where the collective, for whatever complex reasons, had faltered. He wasn't creating chaos. He was confronting an existing systemic chaos that the law had effectively tolerated.
So the question isn't just about the fragility of the rule of law. It's also about the very real fragility of those the law sometimes fails to protect.
I have to fundamentally disagree with the notion that the slowness of the legal process can in itself ever justify bypassing that process entirely. The fragility of those it fails to protect is absolutely a grave concern, a profound one. But it's a concern that should drive us relentlessly to strengthen the rule of law, to make it more effective, more responsive, not to undermine it by sanctioning actions outside of it. If we accept that an individual can just step outside the legal framework simply because they perceive the system to be too slow or maybe ineffective in their specific case, well, we concede the core principle that law, not individual will or passion, governs our society. This sets such a dangerous precedent. It offers a potential justification for almost every act of private retribution, every personal vendetta, cloaked in the language of systemic failure. The path to a more just society, however frustrating its pace might be sometimes, must be through systemic improvement and unwavering adherence to due process. Because the alternative, frankly, leads to a society governed by the subjective passions and interpretations of individuals. And that's a state far more dangerous, ultimately, than even an imperfect but enduring legal structure.
This whole discussion, I think, really illuminates how profound grief, combined with a perceived systemic failure to protect the truly voiceless, can compel an individual to act so far outside established norms. Jonathan Weaver's story, ending with that powerful, almost haunting image of his broken hands and every single cage in that basement standing open, it forces us to confront the real limitations of our institutions, especially when they're faced with these deeply entrenched, hidden evils. It definitely suggests that sometimes maybe the very spirit of justice demands a different kind of intervention, particularly when innocent lives, like Mercy's, are so brutally cut short because of unchecked cruelty and the system's apparent inability to respond effectively in time.
And I suppose I come at it from a slightly different angle. While the emotional weight of Weaver's story is just undeniable, and the plight of those dogs is truly horrific, we must continually reaffirm the paramount importance of the rule of law. The questions raised when individuals take justice into their own hands, however righteous their cause might appear on the surface, they are incredibly complex. They challenge the very foundation of what we consider a just society. There is always, always more to explore here regarding how a society effectively balances that deep compassion we feel with the necessary legal structure and how it responds when those structures appear to falter. Even as, in the background, the sirens approach, the first light of dawn appears, and those cages just stand open.